This talk is entitled Building a Lifelong Relationship with Your Child. The subtitle didn't make it onto the brochure. Six characteristics that really make a difference. First, let me just say what a pleasure it is to be in Toronto. I come from Chicago, and weather isn't that different. It's not like... I like it when I get invited to conferences in Florida in the winter. My wife was saying, "Do you sure you really want to go to Toronto?" And I said, "Well, Chicago's not that different, but the issue is the airlines, the airports." But you're not expecting snow tomorrow, are you? No, good. Rain's good. That's fine. And number two, I want to thank the sponsors. I don't have the brochure in front of me. One is called Torah in Motion. The other is called the Jewish Family Institute. Thank you, and also to the OU and my dear friend Rabbi Frank Bachwitz, who invited me to come. I said at the beginning of last class, I might as well say it in this class too, that especially this class that I'm about to give, my children love it when I teach the following class because. For a day or two before I speak and for a day or two afterwards, I'm really a good parent. You know, Dad's being kinder and nicer. He's not losing his temper because, you know, he's going to feel guilty at the conference. So, for those of you that weren't here, just a drop about me. We live in Chicago. My wife and I are married 24 years. My wife's name is Ayala. And we have, Baruch Hashem, thank God, five boys, although I have experience with girls as well. I taught for many years in high school. I taught boys and girls in the Ida Crown Jewish Academy for 12 years. And I work as a clinical psychologist, in which most of my practice is teenagers, boys and girls, for the last 14 years. my kids are... all ages. The oldest is 23. We just married off our first son, our first child, this summer. Thank you. And our youngest is 9. So we experience all types of hell of adolescence at one time, especially the older three were pretty close in age. So we had three teens at the same time, all struggling in very different ways, very different ways. I do have a handout for this class that will, she has something to say, or he. You don't have to go out. I mean, it's up to you. Okay. Can I just check? Could you see if it going? It is? Okay. So I have a handout for this class. She made 50. I don't know if we need more. It's really just a summary, so you can take it on the way out as a way to remember things about the class if you so choose. Okay, building a lifelong relationship with your child, six characteristics that really make a difference. I want to talk about six, I guess, ideas that we can do as parents that could help facilitate a healthy, loving, close relationship with our child that is really our guidelines for the way we relate to them at all ages. What changes is the way we'll do different parts of the formula. So we'll do something different for a 2-year-old than we will for an 8-year-old, and that we will for a 14-year-old, and then we will for an 18-year-old. But there's a way to parent someone in their 20s, there's a way to parent a married child. You know, we could step on our children, you know, and we, you know, people always say to me, you know, I'm 40 years old and I go home for Hanukkah or I go home for the holidays and all of a sudden me and my sisters are getting into the same arguments we were getting into, you know, 30 years ago. And the truth is, to some degree, there's nothing like family to bring out unique parts of ourselves, certain buttons, and when our children, especially our teens, push some of those same buttons, that's why we have the phenomenon of 30-year-old parents or 35-year-old parents or 45-year-old parents, indistinguishable from their 16-year-old teens, where everybody's hard to pick the adult out of the mess, because they're pushing some of our same buttons. Maybe it's, you know, our teenager treats us like one of our parents did, or perhaps an older sibling, or perhaps a younger sibling, in which they're being manipulative and it's pushing those buttons. So part of the agenda of parenting in general is to try to the best of our ability not to take our baggage with us, which is a really hard thing to do. Probably the best way we could do that is to try to be aware of our own baggage. So the more we have it in awareness, the more we can kind of catch ourselves. But how many of you here in this room, sometime in your life, have caught yourself speaking to your spouse, perhaps, or your child, perhaps, in a certain way, and you say, oh my God, I sound just like my mother or my father, or, you know, I always said I would never, and here I am doing exactly the same thing, because we, you know, we live those tapes and we replay those tapes. But part of growth as spiritual beings and part of growth as human beings is to be able to say that I'm not doomed to repeat, and I can make changes, and I can do something different, and I could do something better, and I'll try to have a relationship. Even if I did not have the best relationship with my parents, I can still have a better and healthier relationship with my child. Well, they sound like they're having a good time. You didn't laugh loud enough, so we're losing. Okay. The first characteristic I want to talk about is respect. So when parents sometimes get uncomfortable when I talk about the importance of respecting your child, because what do you think people mix that up with? Like, it's the same thing as respecting one's parents. And they'll say, well, you know, the Torah or, you know, says that a child is supposed to respect the parents. It doesn't say anywhere that, yes?
Obedience.
Right. Somehow we mix up respect and obedience. If I ask my child to clean their room and they say, no, Dad, take a hike, then they're not respecting me because of the way they talk. Or they didn't listen to what I asked them to do. But if a child asks me to do something, do I have to do it? The child says, you know what, I thought it over, and, you know, me and the other kids decided that we don't go to school this week. Right? So, of course, that's not what I mean by respect. What do you think I mean by respect of one's child? Yes? Right. That's perfect. Your child has confided something personal, and then, you know, at the dinner table, you bring it up. Or you don't bring it up in front of the child, but then your mother calls them on the phone on Friday and says, you know, your mother, you know, it's, you know, your mother's so close to me, so she tells me everything, so just want to know I'm rooting for you. Just want to let you know. What have you pretty much guaranteed? Never talk to you again, or not for a long, long time. There's a way to undo that, but it's hard. It's really hard. But the idea of embarrassing your child. I remember being as a child in a synagogue where you're sitting behind a man who was angry at one of his sons. And his son wasn't, I don't know, praying or doing something, and he slapped his son in synagogue. And, you know, I remember thinking, you might as well just throw out the whole religion. Just throw it out. The whole thing is not worth it if you can do that. Totally ridiculous. But the idea of embarrassing, humiliating your child, to yell at your child in front of his friends or her friends, to poke fun at your child, to tease your child, in ways that they don't find funny, because teasing is okay as long as everyone is in agreement. I tease you, you tease me. It's something that's not, you know, dangerous. Right, right? We're going to say on the same wavelength. It's not something that they've asked you not to tease them about. Oftentimes we don't take our kids seriously, but the idea of respect, and probably, you know, I'm going to make a very strong statement, but probably the foundation of any relationship in life, whether it's marriage or children or siblings or, you know, grandparents or grandchildren or neighbor or coworker or employee or boss, is that they each have their own individual rules about what is respectful versus not. But if you disrespect, if you don't respect, you're pretty much going to, the relationship is going to be damaged. How damaged depends on how much disrespect they feel. You know, so if a child will turn to me in the office and say, "My mother said to me, I'm sorry I ever had you." And the child will say, it's a teenage girl, 14 years old, and she'll say, "I know she may say some things in the heat of the moment, but I could tell she really means this." Whether she did or not, my guess is that at some level she did. I don't know if you could ever take that back. I don't know how many "I'm sorry's" is going to work for this. It's going to be a lifelong of acting "I'm sorry." And the power of words are just, I can't say enough about the power of words, especially from parents to children. Power of words both ways, the power of making a child and the power of breaking a child. And it's so hard because nobody pushes our buttons like our child, with the possible exception of our spouse. Those are the two big relationships that push our buttons most, because it hurts most. If we feel rejected, or we feel hurt. And if they hurt us, what do we do as human beings? We defend. But it would be great if we could just defend, if we could develop a formula, both in marriage and with our children, in which we say something like, "Ouch. That really hurt," or "It's not okay for you to talk to me that way." But what do we do? What do many people do? We counterattack, we retaliate, we take revenge. And with a child, that's deadly. Because when a child says, "I hate you," it doesn't mean it. When a parent says, "I hate you," I don't care if you mean it or not, the child doesn't know it. When you're saying, "Well, the parent doesn't know it either," I'm telling you to know it. The overwhelming majority of times, you know, unless you've abused that child, I don't mean abuse, you make them do their homework or you give them a curfew. Unless you've abused the child, but even an abused child doesn't really typically hate. But the "I hate you," you know, when we figured out that it would be okay for our children to sometimes say, "I don't love you" or "I hate you," that's when, it's okay. It's okay, because that's what the feelings are. We could either teach them not to express the feelings, or we could teach them to express it differently. But when a child says it, we don't want to let them go to their friend's house, "Oh, I hate you." That's just teenage talk. It doesn't mean anything. It's just a different language. If a parent says, "I hate you," they take that for the next 60 years. Yes? That's perfectly fine. That, you know, I don't know if you ever have to use the word "I hate," but, you know, "I'm really angry at what you did," or "I'm so angry." I mean, hate is such a strong word. It should be used, really, sparingly. But the importance of respect is, I'm going to spend the most time talking on this because it's so powerful. Those of you in this room that will admit seeing a movie in the 70s can fill in the blank. Love means never having to say you're sorry. One of the most stupid things to ever come out of Hollywood. In a long list of very stupid things that have come out of Hollywood. A long list, probably the top. The number one stupid thing to come out of Hollywood. We all know, those of you that don't know, it was a silly movie named Love Story, which everybody cried throughout the whole movie. But this quote was in there, love means never having to say you're sorry. Well, we all know the truth is, love means always having to say I'm sorry. Yeah, that's what love means. Yeah, because we're living with someone who we love, so we're living in close proximity, and we're going to hurt their feelings because that's normal. That's normal. So whether it's marriage or children, it means saying I'm sorry. I can't tell you the power of a parent that says I'm sorry at times. Now, if you're beating your child and every day you beat them and you say I'm sorry, you lose, you know, that's true for all relationships. If I did something that was really hurtful today and then I do the same thing tomorrow, and today I said I'm sorry and tomorrow I say I'm sorry and then the next day I say I'm sorry, what you've pretty much succeeded in doing is saying, taking away the power of I'm sorry. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything, even though you're pointing out that we do that with God on a daily basis, but he's more patient than the rest of us. But in family, in relationships, that's not what I mean. I mean that in general, we're pretty good parents. There's no such thing as perfect parents. So because we're imperfect, we're going to blow it sometimes. When we blow it, to say I'm sorry has power, has incredible power. Because when I finally got to my head that I need to do that, when my oldest was a certain age, it gave me so much more power in the relationship. Because then when he was beating up his brother, or he said something that hurt my feelings, I had the power to be able to say that in this family we say I'm sorry. And I was able to back that up. Because he knows that 2 days ago I said I was sorry to mommy or to his brother or to him. There's power there. And what it does is it repairs relationships. Again, not used every day, but maybe once every 2 weeks, maybe even once a week. Certainly once a month is good. Something that every once in a while, when I blow it, when I raise my, you know, when I yell, or I overdo it, or I have an overreaction to something, as all parents do at times, it gives a power to the relationship. Probably the most important thing in which we show our children that we respect them as human beings. When we talk about respect of a child, it means we respect that they have a right to dignity. That every human being has a right to dignity. And if I mess with their dignity, I'm going to mess with the relationship. So if I embarrass my wife or I embarrass my child, no matter the age, a 2-year-old child will get embarrassed for some things. A 12-year-old child might be so sensitive. You know, here's a little caveat. When you say I'm sorry, that I'm sorry shouldn't sound like I'm sorry you're so sensitive. I'm sorry that hurt you because I forgot how sensitive you are. I'm sorry I hurt you, period. Period. Now you may say, well, it's not fair, they're all sensitive. Who cares if it's fair or not? It is. This is. You know, this child, this girl is sensitive about this issue. If I love them, I don't poke fun of them about that issue. I don't. I respect that. And if it's something that they're oversensitive, hopefully they'll grow out of. And in another time, we could have discussions about maybe getting less sensitive, but never, God forbid, to make fun of that. You know, a child that's overweight, to poke fun at that, even if we're doing it to motivate them to lose weight, is that crazy? Yes, it's crazy. It's crazy to poke fun. I'm going to talk in a few minutes about the need for humor and fun and joy in a family. But this is not funny. So we need to differentiate between teasing, like I said before, that's okay, and teasing that's over the line. Between fun that is funny, as the Cat in the Hat would say, and fun that's not funny. The difference between the two. But the issue of respect in that way, and the cornerstone of what makes or breaks all relationships, and this happens with children too, is how do I relate to you, my son, my daughter, when I'm angry with you? Not how I relate to you when everything's going smooth, when you got the A, when you did the homework, when you cleaned up your room, where, you know, you said, yeah, Ma, yeah, Dad. How do I relate to you when you're being annoying? How do I relate to you when you're being incredibly obnoxious? How do I relate to you when you're crossing the line? That's how you make a relationship. You build a relationship with a child that will last a lifetime if when they cross lines, you don't. That's the power. Because children are crossing lines. That's how they learn about lines. But we are adults. We can't cross lines. We can't cross lines. And if we cross lines as we do occasionally, we take responsibility for it right away as opposed to saying, you made me do it. You made me do it. If you wouldn't have been so bad, I wouldn't have been forced to swear at you, hit you, fill in the blank, whatever it is that is not acceptable, period. Even if they've crossed the line. There needs to be consequences for their crossing lines. Whether it's grounding or timeouts or other kinds of things. They can't go to the sporting event. They can't go out with their friends. Whatever you pick, I'm happy to have consequences. The only thing that's not okay is for us to cross lines when they cross lines. That's where we lose them. That's where the relationship begins to die. When kids will come into my office and say, you know, I just, you know, my dad has just embarrassed me too many times. I'm done. They're often not really done, but they're protecting themselves. They're building this protection. Yes?
What do you do for a child whose parent is embarrassing them and crossing all these lines, and there's no way to work with the parent to lose the child and help them deal with that?
You're saying in therapy? Or as a teacher? Or as... Oh, what do I do? Right, so sometimes, you know, there are times that I agree with a child when they I don't say anything to the child, but I begin to talk about what it means to have a relationship with someone that can't give you what you need. You know, now sometimes they'll say, I want to write it off, so, you know, we'll begin to talk about that, but I don't know if we have to go into that. But, you know, sometimes the realistic is the parent is so limited that they just can't. You know, they can't. Yes? I can't hear you. What?
You're saying I'm sorry.
Yes.
I sometimes get the feeling the child says I'm sorry as a way to get away with having done something he knows he shouldn't have done.
Right.
In other words,
okay, so be careful, because that's absolutely true some of the time. And some of the time, they're just so uncomfortable with the I'm sorry, they're not used to it, that they say it in this quick, superficial way, but that doesn't mean they don't mean it. So, and it's really, you know, I do a lot of marriage workshops, so one of the marriage workshops is they say that, try to do a good I'm sorry, and then I turn to the other person and say, try to accept even an imperfect I'm sorry. So I'll say that to parents, too. So it depends. There could still be consequences, you know, with the I'm sorry. They should be rewarded in some way, a hug, for saying the I'm sorry. Even an imperfect or not great I'm sorry, as long as it's not a sarcastic I'm sorry, which is the domain, really, of teenagers, then I think that should be accepted. Although you could still be consequences, you know, but we have to be careful, because we have to nurture the I'm sorry. So if we're too tough on the I'm sorry at first, we'll lose that. They'll just say, you don't accept, forget it, I'm not even going to bother, because then I'm going to get a lecture about the, you know, it won't work. So you got to be careful with that. But sometimes, yeah, and sometimes no. Maybe what I'll do is I'll talk straight for, let's say, 20 minutes and then leave time for questions as well. So, last thing about the respect. How do we act when we're angry to them? How do we fight with them? The idea of fair fighting is true in marriage. It's true with children. Don't bring up issues that have nothing to do with now. Don't generalize. Don't say you always do this. You know, focus on the issue at hand. Stay not personal. Be straight. Be assertive. What's your tone of voice? We'll talk more about tone of voice in the next characteristic. But what's your nonverbals? You know, when you're talking to them, when you're angry. Because children get a lot of power when parents lose control, when they see that they're losing control. And it's not a power that makes them feel good, although they are drawn to that. But essentially, they really do want you to be the one that's in control. A trick of lowering your voice instead of raising your voice when upset is a good trick. It helps calm you down to lower your voice, and the kid begins to get nervous about the whisper. Right, well, they begin to get nervous about that. Boy, I must have really upset mom now. And isn't that great? As opposed to mom is, you know, breaking dishes, you know, mom is like speaking in her deadly quiet voice. There's a famous family. One of the rabbis in this family lives in Milwaukee. It's the Twersky family. You may have heard of Abraham Twersky, who's a famous author and psychiatrist. I have a relationship with a number of these Twersky brothers. They're really quite amazing. It's a Hasidic family. One is a rabbi. One is a really world-renowned psychiatrist. One is a dean of a law school. One is a successful businessman. I'm trying to remember what the third. And I once said to one of the Twerskys, I said, "What did your parents do? I mean, what did they do?" And he said a lot. It's a lot of what they didn't do. He said, "My parents were the masters of using disapproval sparingly, and they were also masters at being half blind. They were masters of that." And it's really the idea that I'm sure you've heard 1,000 times, but it's an important idea. Choose your battles. Don't nitpick. Don't be picky-uni about everything that they don't do right. You know, the old rule of 4 compliments to every insult, or every criticism, no insults, but 4 compliments to every criticism, or 5, I would be happy if it was even, because I don't buy it. The overwhelming majority of parents, even if sweet, gentle parents, are still pointing out all the things they're doing wrong, because they do a million things wrong, right? So it's very hard. The need to I'll talk more about compliments at number 3 or number 4. All right, let's move on. The second thing, so the first issue is the issue of respect, and it's more how it comes out when we're disrespecting them. It's not so much of, you know, I honor them, I listen to them. I like the idea of taking opinions from your child, but it's not a democracy. Families are not democracies. They get more democratic over time, but then they're really not a democracy. They're even really, maybe once they're married and they're financially independent, maybe there's some democratic principles fully. But the idea of, it's a monarchy, but it's a gentle monarchy. It's a monarchy that's built on the respect of each one of its members. But parents have a right, not only a right, a responsibility to make decisions, certainly when the children are young, and even through the teen years, certainly through the teen years. And even after that, you have the power to say no to some degree. Not to some degree, to the full degree. It's your money. They don't have to. But a wise parent, like in that beautiful little novel, The Little Prince, a wise king knows to give orders that will be, you know, followed. So what I mean by that is a wise parent knows that as a child gets older, more and more flexibility needs to be there. You're still a parent. You know, more autonomy, more input from the children. Let's have a discussion. Let's talk about that. And a wise parent knows that on certain areas, go along with them so they feel that the decisions, that their opinions, that their words matter. That their words matter, that they have some power within the system. That they have lots of autonomy, perhaps, over certain things in their life and no autonomy over other things. But give them autonomy. So respect in that kind of way. The next thing is to create an atmosphere of warmth in your home. And this is where the nonverbals come in. Are you careful to give your children smiles? What's your tone of voice like? I remember many years ago, I called the house once during the day from work, and I left a message for one of my children that I wanted him to do a favor for me when he got home. And it was, you know, whatever it was, I remember it was, to look up something for me. It was a 2-minute thing. and to, you know, and to please call me back. And I think I said, please call me back. When I came home that night, I was listening to the messages, and I heard my own voice. And I was appalled. It felt like it was somebody talking to an employee. It wasn't, I didn't say anything mean. But where's, I'm talking to my child. Where's the opportunity for warmth in my voice? You know, it was a missed opportunity, and not only that, it was a negative opportunity because it sounded kind of cold and businesslike, and I'm sure I was doing a million things, and I had 2 minutes of a break, and I really needed that. And I'm not even sure how much it bothered him, but I was appalled. I didn't like the way I sounded. You know, it sounded cold, it sounded businesslike, and yeah, he was young. You know, maybe as an older, that would be better, although not. I mean, we're always the children of our parents. We still look for approval with our parents. You know, no matter your age, we still want our parents to be proud of us. But the idea of warmth, and this is in the nonverbals. How do I talk? You know, do I say I love you? You know, in some families, they, you know, some people will say to me, I used to say it's so important to say I love you, and I still believe it is important. But some families say I love you in different ways. You know, certainly the last generation or two generations ago, it was less common to say I love you. But, you know, if certainly I think it's good to say I love you. But I've passed the point of saying that if you don't say I love you, you don't have other ways to show it. It's certainly clearer. I know people that have said to me, my father never said I love you, but I always knew it cold. And other times people said to me, my mother always said I love you, but I never believed her. So it's our actions. What? No, you can't win. Well, the win is, do we act I love you? Is our behavior consistent with I love you? If your behavior is, I think it's a cherry on top. It's a good thing to be able to say I love you. An atmosphere of warmth. Do we smile? Is there something real in the air? Do our kids know that I'm genuinely happy to see them? And I lost my father 2 years ago, but even before that he had Alzheimer's, and so he was sick for many, many years. So it was probably it's probably been 10 or 12 years since I had a regular relationship with my father. But he, you know, one of the most wonderful things my father did, and he wasn't an I love you kind of man, but, you know, it was so obvious to myself and to my sister how crazy. He was a Holocaust survivor, and we just knew that we could do anything. We were just gold. We were the treasure. We were the gift that he never thought he would have. So it was, but I'll remember for all time the incredible thing, and I'm going to push, I push parents to do the same thing. I push myself to do the same thing, that when he would introduce me to people, I would look, because it was always there, the sparkle in his eye. You know, when he would see me, I would go away to yeshiva, or I was in graduate school, or I would come home, you know, for a visit, and just the look on his face would light up. You can't like fake that. You can't fake it. There was a sparkle in his eye that made me feel more than anything, that spoke more eloquently than anything he could have said of how much he cared about me, and how happy he was to see me, although we didn't always agree on things. Now, that wasn't the issue. The issue was I made him happy. And that's a very powerful thing. It's probably one of the cornerstones of self-esteem, is a sense that our children feel the warmth and the love that really goes into the third thing, which is they feel a sense of approval. So let's say the first thing is respect. The second thing is warmth. The third thing is that our kids know that we're proud of them. And sometimes it's really hard. You know, like I said in the last class, if we have an A student, or they're a sports star, or they do really good in terms of, you know, obedience and behavior, they're easy, they follow the rules, they go to the right schools. You know, If religion is an issue, they're religious exactly the way I want them to be. Not too much, not too little. You know, they're following me, they have my values. They make me feel good about me. There's an expression called the nachas machine. They give me nachas. They make me feel good about myself. Those kids, yeah, every time I see them, I'm happy to see them. Well, you know why? Because it makes me feel good too. What about the other kids? Kids that don't want to get up, we're always late for carpool. I don't know if Toronto has carpools. You guys have real buses? You guys have carpools? Good. You guys are cursed like we are in Chicago also. No school buses. They're always late. They don't want to wear what you want them to wear. They can't find anything. They never do their homework. They're difficult children. Their personalities are difficult. They're hard to get along with. They don't let you love them. What I mean by that is you could still love them, but they don't let you express your love for them. They don't let you hug them. They don't let you kiss them. Difficult children. I worked with a mother and a teenage boy. He was totally out of control. Totally out of control. He was, I think at the time, 14 and a half. He was involved in drugs, and some of the drugs were heavy. He was sexually promiscuous. He was breaking all kinds of religious rules and breaking all kinds of civil rules as well. He was on the edge of always being kicked out of school. He was obnoxious and often quite chutzpahdik. Really a real pleasure. And mom walks in with him and says, you know, we're going to tell you a lot of things that we're upset about, but I want to tell you one thing first. And she made me cry. Because what she said is, I have to tell you about this boy. He had an earring, he had hair, and it looked like it was a tattoo. He was a disaster. He said, there's an older woman that lives on our block. This boy is always the first one out of the house. Whenever she comes home from anywhere, he always helps her up the stairs. He always helps her in with her packages. He goes to visit nursing homes because he likes elderly people. I'm looking at him, what? And I knew that this family was going to be okay. Because mom had the ability to not be blinded by all the dark stuff. She could still see the light. And that's a hard thing to do. Because if our kids don't act in the ways we want them to act, we tend to go the other way. All we see is the black. They're so obnoxious, don't listen, they always give me an argument. Well, what about all the good stuff they do? Well, I can't find anything good. Well, it's your job as a parent to find something good, and it has to be real. Not, I really like the gym shoes they buy. Or they have good taste in earrings. You need to figure out something they do good. And you know what? Sometimes it's hard. And sometimes it may even feel impossible. And if you feel like it's impossible, you have to like keep on looking. Keep on looking. Because sometimes people will say to me, well, he's not being very loyal to the family, but he's really a wonderful friend. His friends are all drug dealers. It's a hard one. So what do I mean? Does that mean you should ignore the other stuff? Of course not. And that mother said clearly, we're here to do hard work. This kid is in trouble. But I don't want to forget for a moment that he's got a heart of gold. He's hurting, but he's got a heart of gold. And he's doing things that are really hurting the family. And they did. They came back. And that kid turned around. But it took a few years. But mom never gave up. So the sparkle in a parent's eyes. It's something that builds self-esteem. It's something that builds a sense of that a child often feels, I'm not good enough. We live in a society that's a lot of pressure. It's incredibly pressured in different ways for boys and girls. Girls all feel like they have to look like Britney. And if they don't, and I'm talking about even religious girls feel this way, even Orthodox Jewish girls will feel like they have to like be gorgeous and so skinny. And that's why we're literally in an epidemic of eating disorders throughout really the entire teenage world, including the Jewish teenage world. There's a really good book, I'm sure you've heard of it, Reviving Ophelia, about teenage girls. Very beautiful and very powerful. And boys have their own pressures. And peer pressures are incredibly hard. And as I said, you know, in last class, it's about building a relationship that will help these kids get through. There's no guarantees. But the best shot we could give our kid is to have a relationship with their parents that they feel is strong, is secure, and is safe. Safe means my parents won't hurt me intentionally. Or if they do sometimes, they lose it. They'll take responsibility and make it and prove to me that they didn't mean it. There's a sense of warmth and a sense that my parents are proud of me even if I'm not perfect. Having said that, that's kind of the soft side of the equation. I have to say something because it's so important. Because I've seen parents that have neglected their job because through being too tough. And I've also worked with many parents that are too soft, who abdicate their parental role. And that's number four. To have firm expectations of our child. To have family values that are important. If you follow, you know, Judaism, to make that the value of your home. And to make that something that the kids believe is real. Because sometimes, you know, parents will tell their kids, we follow all of Jewish law here. And of course, as soon as the parents are out of the room, the kid will give me all the list of the things that the parents are doing. And it doesn't make a difference, but hypocrisy is deadly. And that doesn't mean you need to be perfect, but at least it has to be real. But whatever your values are, the values can't just be for your kids. You know, so if you say, in this house, honesty, you always have to tell me the truth. Do you live a life of truth? You know, do you live a life of truth? Do your kids know that you don't lie? Do your kids know that, you know, the tax returns are straight? You do taxes in Toronto? Because if you don't, maybe we'll move here. You know, are you straight? Are you straight? Are you straight? And if you have values about wanting to be respected, do they see that you respect others? One of the most deadly things of losing a relationship with a child is if parents don't talk respectfully to each other. This is not about respecting the child. This is about mutual respect in the family. Boys and girls have told me that they can't, yeah, my father's actually kind of nice to me, but he's such a jerk to my mother. It's gone. They lose it. They lose respect for parents. And so what do you do if you don't have such a great marriage? Well, you have to work. Number one, you have to work on your marriage. Because that's part of parenting too. You have to find time not only for each of your children, you have to find time for your marriage. But number two is that the kids know that no matter what, even if mom and dad don't always agree, but they have mutual respect. They treat each other with respect. But back to firm guidance, that we have values and that we have rules. And that the rules have some flexibility, but there are certain rules that don't have flexibility. And the rules have to make some sense with some consistency, although they don't have to make perfect sense. And your child doesn't have to agree with the rules. And if mother and father, or if it's a single-parent family, if the father or the mother, whichever one is the parent that's in charge, says this is when curfew is, then within maybe a 15-minute window, because they'll push it, that's it. That's it, with clear consequences. Not to be afraid to say no. I've never seen a relationship get ruined because parents fairly said no. Relationships get ruined when they say no with a bat in their hand. Or they say no with like losing control. No is no. Don't take it personally. Say no the way Calvin's mother says no to him. And Calvin and Hobbes. Like, no. It's just no. I'm not going to take it personally. I'm staying up. I'm going to watch TV all night. No, you're not. No, you're not. Don't take it personally. Strong. No. I had a boy that I worked with many years ago who told me that he lost all respect for his parents because they never said no to him. They were very wealthy, very, very wealthy, and instead of them giving him time, they gave him money. So he had his own credit card at the age of 15, and nobody checked the bills. They just paid the bills automatically. He was running up $1,000 bills every month. He was trying to get them to notice him, and it didn't work. It was so sad. It was so sad. It was like his parents were not involved. It's like, you know, whatever. That's neglect. So hurting our children with words perhaps is abuse, and letting our children do whatever they want is neglect. That's also bad. It's also terrible. It's also not parenting. You'll say, well, you don't give us a break. That's right. As Dr. Laura would say before she got into trouble, you had them, you got to take care of them. It's hard work. It's very hard work. And that means saying no, but saying no and firm. Occasionally saying, allowing them to negotiate you into a yes, but only occasionally. And lots of no's. Lots of yeses, but lots of no's. Lots of no's. And not feeling guilty. You know, the reason why first children are often so hard is because parents feel like their kids have to like them all the time. Your kids don't have to like you. And they'll love you more if they don't like you all the time. Because you're not their friend, you're their parent. You know? You don't have to agree with them, I'm the parent. I remember when one of our kids was 16, we had a whole discussion about something. And I said to him, and you know, at that point I was, you know, we had a good relationship with him. I said to him, listen, you're 16, I hear what you're saying. When I was your age, I probably felt the same way, but we're going to overrule you on this one. And you know what? We'll talk about it again when you're 18 if you want, but it's not going to happen. You know, whatever it was, I don't even remember what it was, but I remember that he was so upset. But, you know, he's a special kid. 2-3 days later, he came over to me, he said, okay, I got it. I thought about it, I let it go, and I got it. Most kids don't do that. It's a very special young man. I got it. Most of us don't get that reward. With my other four, I don't get that. We don't get that, you know. But you know what? That's what it means. That's why you get paid the big bucks as parents. You know what the big bucks are? Sometimes nachas. Right? So we had one of my kids, my oldest, was very difficult during the young years. He actually was a wonderful teenager. He did his teenage years from the age of 3 to 9. I don't understand it. He like got like a lot of junk out then, and the payback, the big bucks, was last August when my wife and I walked with him down to the chuppah when he got married. You know, and I looked over his head at my wife and we made eye contact as we walked down the aisle with him and remembered what age 8 was like. You know, yeah, that's the deal. That's the deal. If we do it right, most times we can get nachas, not always. Because kids are their own people. We can't take full responsibility. Kids make their own decisions. Our job as parents is to do the best. And the best is to build a relationship with the child that the child knows you're the parent. And we have values. If the values are based on Torah, then perhaps that's you have a structure that you could point to. And you could say, this is what we do in this house, but it only works if the parents live that way too. So then they know it's sincere. A young man once told me that he stopped keeping Shabbos when he was 9 because his father talked the talk but didn't walk the walk. Said he caught his father watching TV once on a Friday night. And he said it was over. He actually liked his father, but he said, but don't tell me this is real because I know it's bull. So he didn't, you know, it's a scary thing, but our children watch us. I had a teacher, a rabbi, who used to say there's very little that we actually have to teach to our children directly in terms to character. We don't have to tell them a whole lot. We just have to act that way. If we want our children to be respectful human beings, then we have to treat other people and them like with respect. You know that? It used to be that poem that was on the office of the pediatrician's wall always. Children learn what they live. You know, I'm so old. But this idea of children, it's a beautiful, beautiful poem. Look it up online somewhere. It's called Children Where They Live. And it's this idea over and over again. Children learn what they live. In other words, the way we treat them, the way they watch. It's modeling. Most of parenting is modeling. You know, parents brought in their 14-year-old daughter to me and said their daughter is totally out of control. When she loses her temper, she's a complete mess. So I sent the daughter out of the room for a minute, and I turned to the parents and said, how do you guys act when you're really angry? So, of course, they both turned purple, and they say, okay, but, you know, we lose our temper, but we have reason to lose it. Well, our kids learn from us. Kids that have parents with high anxiety typically have high anxiety. Kids who have parents with anger problems often have anger problems too. That doesn't mean, but you can have parents who are perfectly fine in this and still have kids with these issues. But it's more times than not, but if you have parents with these issues, you're pretty sure going to have kids with these issues. Okay, two more things quickly, and then we'll take comments. The importance of living with joy in your house. I cannot say enough, I don't have a lot to say about it, but I cannot emphasize enough about how powerful it is, the magic of laughing in a family. Families that laugh together. It's so powerful. My kids will remember times, oftentimes at my expense, of that we laughed. They remember we went on vacation and I slid into the water and I walked out of the water with mud all over me. And they'll remember it for all time. Their favorite story of all time is about keeping perspective, keeping a sense of humor, keeping perspective. Well, they'll say to me, even as a joke, because they're so sick of it, because they've heard me say to parenting, you know, they heard some of my tapes. So we once went up to northern Wisconsin in the summer for a family vacation. I'm a big believer in, if you can afford it, to spend at least a few days, at least, if you can, a week, but if not, at least 3 or 4 days every summer, just you. No friends or families, not even grandparents necessarily, unless they're part of the family unit, right? Just parents or parent and children to bond together. Without any homework in the way, without cleaning up your room, you know, as an ongoing thing. We did this over the years. We would take a week or 6 days every single summer and do something. So one year, and part of our vacation is always to do a little bit of renting a boat for an hour or two. So one year we rented a pontoon. I think at that point we had 4 children. We rented a pontoon, and somebody mentioned Gilligan's Island before, a little bit like, oh, actually, that was in the other class. Yeah, a little bit like Gilligan, we set out for a 2-hour cruise. The weather was perfect when we set out, so we had this pontoon. It wasn't that expensive. I think we took it for 4 hours, so we went out for 2 hours, and then on the way back, a storm from hell erupted. Okay, so my oldest at the time was, I don't know, maybe 10, very rambunctious, was very much enjoying the storm. My wife had a baby in her arms, so she couldn't. I'm driving the boat. The boat is literally strong winds, a little bit of lightning thrown in for fear, and you know. So my oldest one is having the time of his life. He's jumping up and down. He's throwing things off the boat. I'm afraid he's going to go over, right? So at that point, you know, he's like I'm about to blow because I'm afraid. There's a lot of fear here. I don't know, God, I'm going to, you know, my wife's holding a baby in terms of this, although pontoons typically don't turn over, but you never know. So at that point, we were in a small town of Wisconsin where they hadn't seen a lot of Jews before. So when we go to places like that, we typically, instead of wearing yarmulkes, we would wear baseball caps. Me and the boys. So we didn't have our yarmulkes. We all had baseball caps. My son's, you know, jumping up and down, and a wind comes and blows his baseball cap off his head. So then I lost, and I started yelling at him, what are you doing? It's dangerous. You crazy. What are you doing? Just all the things I'm embarrassed of. Terrible. Terrible. I'm in the middle of yelling at him when a wind comes and takes my baseball cap right in the water. At that moment, it all got quiet. It's like the whole world stopped. The birds stopped. Everybody wanted to see. It's like, you know, it's like they couldn't believe it. My son, you know, is like that at me. My baseball, so we have two baseball caps sinking in the water then, right? At that point, you know, I look at them. They look at me. We burst out laughing. This is a family memory, not the screaming part. But for years, when they felt, 5 minutes, okay, for years, I'll take questions in a moment, for years when they felt that Daddy needed a reminder of keeping your perspective, chill out, Dad, one of the smart alecky sons would say to me, baseball cap, and it would stop me cold. Because, yeah, kids know when we're overreacting. We're allowed to react. We're allowed to even overreact at times, but at times. It cannot be parenting by overreaction. It has to be this sense of that this is a relationship and I'm building it for eternity. I'm building it over a lifetime, over a lifetime. Last thing, so for this thing of joy is to find times to laugh, and that could be on a holiday, but still in the fifth thing. The holidays, to make them light, to be joyous, to have lots of singing, to have music in the house. To have laughter, to be a little light, and to not take ourselves so seriously all the time. To be less heavy ourselves. Families where the parents are heavy, there's a depression or a darkness in the home. That doesn't mean everything should be a joke. Lots of things that are serious, but also room for lightness and joy. Last thing is to find time, and this is, you know, you're going to give me a hard time with this. But this is where I'm going to turn to you. I'm telling you how hard it is to, you know, everything you need to do as a parent. I'm saying you need to find time for yourself. You need to find time to recharge. You need to find time to be able to. So somebody said to me, I got 7 children. You're telling me to find time for yourself? For myself? And I'll say to her, listen, what would happen if you had 8 children? Would you be able to say, I'm sorry, I can't take care of one this week? You know, my limit is 7. Well, you should have thought of that before, if you know what I mean. But separate from that, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that. You know that that's what it means to be a parent. So I'm telling you that part of parenting is to add on 2 more children. And one child is called marriage, and one child is called self. You need to find time for yourself. Maybe not as much time as each child needs to get, but some time. If you could grab, you know, a half hour a day, fine. Most people can't. If you could grab an hour or two a week, then grab it. Couples need to find time to go away together. If you could pull that off, if you have somebody, anybody that will watch your child, drop them off at the fire department. If you have somebody that could watch your children go away, even if it's only for a night. People say to me, oh, a vacation just for a night is not worth anything. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. As a marriage and for yourself. If you find time, we need to find time to work out. If you could do that, whether it's time for prayer, time for learning, time for music, time for a hobby, something. Something that gives you the ability to recharge. You know? Oftentimes, women give me the hardest time with this. I can't, I have no time, I can't, I have permission. My husband finds time for himself. Or not, sometimes it's the other way. Find time for self. Find time for self to recharge. And find time for your marriage. Every day in your marriage to find time to connect with each other. Find time for sexuality with your spouse. With your spouse. Let me clarify that. Right. Right. Find time. Find time to keep your marriage fresh and young and light. Yeah, it's powerful. And the more time you have for yourself, then the more time and more energy you have for your children. and the less resentful and angry you are. The world is filled with angry, resentful parents because they're overwhelmed because they never have time for themselves. Well, I can't. So do it. Well, what am I going to do? And who's going to do homework with my child? Your child won't do homework that night or that week. Yeah, if your teachers don't like it, too bad. Too bad. It's not going to kill them. It's not. Your kids will be very happy. Everybody gains here. Everybody gains. All right, questions or comments? Yes.
So if you have a different
idea of what is acceptable for parents of your children's friends. Right. The best thing to do is to develop some allies among some of your kids' friends' parents. Right. You can get away with that.
Yes, I realize it.
You could. It's hard.
Is there a danger of pushing your child away because you're being
a strict parent? Yes. Yes. You have to choose your issues. If they're going to mixed parties where everyone knows there's drugs and boy-girl stuff, then too bad. That's not acceptable in our family. I don't care what you say. And you will not be hurt for that, although your kids will be really angry at you. But if everyone else's parents is 1 o'clock curfew and you're assisting on an 11 o'clock curfew on vacation, maybe there's room for adjustment there, maybe. You need to, like, choose your things, you know, safety, you know, religion. How, you know, it's a problem. When parents tell me that they're religious and everyone else in the class have different rules, I know it's going to be complicated. Some kids will rise to the occasion and actually feel good about their self-esteem and saying, I could be different than other ones, and other kids will be a mess. You know, other kids will be a mess. I'm working with somebody right now where that kid is just, I don't want to be different from anyone else. My parents shouldn't have sent me to this school. And she's right. She has a good point to that. What are you doing? Why did you put me in this situation? I'm not strong enough to be the rabbi here. I don't want to be the rabbi. I want to be like everybody else, and that's a legitimate issue. So, you know, that's hard. Some other kids, you know, rise to it. I mean, you know, it's interesting, a study of why some yeah and some no. I'm not sure. Yes. And then, yes, you. And then you. But. Right. That's why I said before, you could do everything perfectly, and sometimes a child's temperament. I mean, the child is his own person, too.
How much?
How much what?
The parents, can you go backwards again and again so you don't clash?
No. I mean, it depends on what the issue is. But, you know, probably that's where you need to get professional intervention. Some third person that could be neutral here to negotiate what's appropriate and not. Because once a parent is in it for years with a child, it's hard to see clearly. Because now it's like a power struggle already. It's like you don't trust each other so much anymore once it's been going on. Then it's probably worth it to go even just one time or two times to a professional. It doesn't need to have to go on for years necessarily. Just to kind of negotiate a way of talking to each other. I think we're in dinner time, so I'm okay to stay if you want to, but, you know, why don't we call it, thank you all for coming, and thanks for...